Our first presenter today will be Dr. Kevin Duvetter, who is a professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Kansas State University. His specialty is farm management and marketing. He focuses much of his attention on leasing and buying land, machinery costs, crop and livestock production economics, marketing, and technology adoption. As a researcher and extension agricultural economist, Duvetter has authored numerous publications and producer decision tools and was instrumental in the development and implementation of the AgEcon MAST education program and the agmanager.info website. Kevin grew up on a diversified crop and livestock farm in northwest North Dakota and holds BS, MS, and PhD degrees in agricultural economics from North Dakota State University, Iowa State University, and Kansas State University, respectively. Dr. Duvetter joins us today for the third AAEA Extension Section webinar to present general trends and issues related to leasing land. With that, Dr. Duvetter, I will turn it over to you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John. It's a real pleasure to be here today. Just one quick little follow-up on your introduction. I have been working at Kansas State University now for 25-plus years, and as you alluded to, this topic is something we deal with tremendously on a day-to-day basis. I'm guessing that most everyone on the audience deals with it as well. But I point that out because some of my perspectives obviously will have a Kansas slant, but I also suspect that that's very similar in most regions across the U.S. Just real quick, and I'm not going to get into a lot of detail the different types of leases. I believe William will spend a little bit more time on some of these. But when we think about the types of leases on cropland, in my conversation we'll talk about cropland specifically, we've got a traditional crop share lease where we share the crop, the income. Typically, we would also share some expenses, things like fertilizer, maybe herbicides. In Kansas, we've also had some interest in what we call a net share rent, where we are sharing the income and the crop. So the landowner takes an ownership in the grain, therefore they have to market grain, but there's no input shared. This came about because some landowners didn't mind sharing risk, but they didn't like to pay bills. So literally, they will take a smaller share of the crop in exchange for no inputs. And then obviously, we have things like fixed cash rent, where the landowner receives a cash payment in exchange for the use of the land. We also have what I'm going to call more hybrid type leases or flexible leases. This is what William will spend a lot more time on. So I'm not going to go into any detail on that other than to say there's a lot of different ways of doing these. This particular slide shows some data from a number of states. On the left, we've got some information from the University of Illinois, or from Illinois, I should say, specifically. Then on the right, there's some information from Iowa, Kansas, and Oklahoma. And if you just sat and looked at that graph, really the main thing to come across is that as a general rule, what we tend to see is that the Corn Belt probably has a higher percentage of their land cash rented as opposed to crop share. I think that makes a lot of sense that traditionally the drier regions of the High Plains have had more production risk, and therefore landowners oftentimes were asked to share in some of that risk, and that was done through a crop share rent. But the other thing is, and you can't really see that from this graph, but from other data, there's clearly a trend towards more cash rent most everywhere. Just that in states like Kansas, we're lagging behind maybe the Corn Belt, but we clearly are moving to more and more cash rent. And I always ask people, you know, why is that happening? Well, there's a host of reasons. Some of those reasons are driven by landowners. Some of those are driven by tenants. But the point is we're moving to more and more cash rents. The other thing that's becoming more obvious, we're using more of these non-traditional leases, the flexible rents, and that's why we're going to specifically spend some more time on that in this webinar. Another, just some background data. This is some information from Iowa, Kansas, and Oklahoma that talks about how long land tends to be rented to the same tenant. And I think a lot of people recognize this, that producers tend to lease land from the same landowner for a relatively long time. We know that long-term relationships can be both good and bad. They're good because that allows tenants to make long-term decisions on things like conservation, whether it's tiling, whether it's terraces. It also helps them to do long-term things with regards to nutrient management. On the other hand, I would argue that long-term relationships can be bad because we get very complacent. We tend to just do things the way we've always done them. We all know that agriculture has changed considerably in the last 5 years, and therefore it might be that our historical relationship needs to be changed or modified as well. So how is it that we come up with the terms of a lease? Whether we're talking about a crop share rent or whether we're talking about cash lease, how exactly do we come up with that number or that equitable share? Well, we in Extension and as educators, we get asked that all the time. But the answer is we really don't set rates. It's the market that does that. It's landowners that have land, their supply. It's producers that have farm equipment that want to rent that land, that's demand. And where those two parties come together in negotiations, that's what ultimately sets rates. So it's the market that sets these rates. So let's just look at a couple examples of markets. And I realize this graphic has a lot of numbers, and that's not the point that there's you have to read the numbers. But USDA NAS surveys cash rent information at the county level, I believe in most every state now, that began in 2009. And they provide an estimate of what the market is. Some problems with that, though, is that an average number for a county can be very misleading for a number of reasons. One is we all know that land is not all equal. Even though we're now at a county level, there still can be a tremendous amount of variation in the quality of land from one area of the county to another. We also know that not all relationships are equal. Sometimes land is rented for below market rates because someone's trying to help somebody else get started in farming. And we don't know that information when we just see an average. And then finally, we don't know the terms of the lease. Has this lease been going on for the last 10 years? Was there a bonus paid that was not reported? Here's another slide from Illinois that basically backs up that last one. And this one shows, like I said, once again, data from Illinois, it says how much variation there is in the rent in a county compared to the county average. And what you can see is we can see that in Illinois that in some cases about 10% of the time, the cash rent in that county might be $60 to $100 or more than $100 more than the average. And likewise, 10% of the time, it might be $6 less. Tremendous amount of variability. So once again, an average number is going to be very misleading because it doesn't tell us the whole story. Some of the conclusions that Gary Schnitke at the University of Illinois had in that paper was he said, part of this is due to land quality differences. And I think we would all agree that that variability is due to quality differences in land. But he also pointed out that a big portion of that's due to relationships, something I alluded to earlier. And his another comment was that landowners and tenants are generally aware of differences that exist, and this is consistent with what they want. I'm not sure that's always the case, or at least not in my experiences in Kansas. I would argue that what we observe many times in Kansas is that there's large differences, but oftentimes the landowner might not be aware that they might be being paid way less than the average. Regardless, the implications are that an average cash rent is not a very good indication of what it takes necessarily to rent that next piece of ground. It also says that sometimes those numbers we hear is not a good indication of what's an average in the area as well. So reiterate that averages have some value, but they have very little value in determining what a particular parcel of ground should rent for. So if that's the case, we've got these market established rates, but they're not really doing a very good job. What exactly should we do? Well, one of the approaches we take in Kansas, and I think people do in other places as well, is that we can look at what an equitable crop share might be and start using that as a point for what might be a reasonable cash rent. When we talk about an equitable lease, and what we're really talking about is that we believe both parties, landowner, tenant, really are in this to maximize profits. And we know that's not always true. Clearly, there's cases where people have other motives, and that's okay. But we're using the assumption that that is what they're looking at. We also point out that on average in the long run, economic profits are expected to equal zero. It also should factor in opportunity costs, which basically says it really doesn't matter if we've got depth on that land or not, if we're highly leveraged on our machinery or not, things of that nature. And then finally, we should be accounting for whether or not this is crop share, cash rent with regards to risk, and we'll talk about that in a little bit here. Well, this is 20 years of data from Northwest Kansas, our enterprise analysis with our Kansas Farm Management Association. And you can see that on average, we seldom cover total costs. So in the previous slide, I said, on average, in the long run, profits equal zero. This would actually suggest that maybe on average in the long run, they might even be below zero. Clearly, the last 5 years, they've been significantly above zero for most crops, on average. And that suggests to me that we might be seeing some adjustments going forward. Likely, those adjustments will be in our land rental rates. That's not a Kansas unique scenario. This is similar data for corn and soybeans in Illinois, and the same kind of pattern holds true. The first 15 years out of this 20-year time period, on average, a very negative margin. In other words, total costs were actually negative, or total returns above total costs were actually negative. The last 5 years have averaged quite well, but once again, suggesting that we probably will continue to see an adjustment, and in many cases, that adjustment could be higher rents. Well, I mentioned the difference in risk, and we do know that a producer that's cash renting land has more risk than a producer who's renting land on a crop share basis. That's because regardless of what the yields are, regardless of what the market's at, they're committed to a cash rental payment, whereas with crop share, the landowner, by definition, is sharing in some of that risk. So what that really says is a producer should expect, on average, to make more money when they rent land on a cash basis in exchange for the risk they're taking. Likewise, a landowner should actually expect to make less money with a cash rent than a crop share because they have less risk. The big question is how much less? Well, I posed that question to a number of landowner and tenants that were attending our meeting in the winter. And out of 202 people 2 years ago, this was the response. I gave them clicker questions. And you can see that about 82% of the people said a landowner should make somewhere between 0 and 15% less when they go to cash rent compared to what they would have made with crop share. I asked the same question this past winter. The only difference was is I widened out the scale thinking that maybe I had biased people. And you can see that we still have about 82% suggesting somewhere between 0 to 20%. But you'll notice in both cases, there's a number of people that said it should be about the same amount. So that suggests to me that there's a huge difference in the risk aversiveness of our tenants. Some feel they should pay a lot less. Others say it's not that big a deal, I'd pay the same amount. So that's what's going to dictate what drives some of the local rents. This is only 2 years of data. 2 years of data is probably not long enough to make strong, bold statements. But at Illinois, we actually saw that landowners that received cash rent made more money than those that were getting a crop share. Remember, from a landowner's perspective, we would expect them to make less, but not, in this case, they weren't making less, they actually were making more. But I would remind you, it's only 2 years, and that might be what's driving that. Well, why might that be the case? Why is it that if we move from crop share to cash rent, that we actually won't see rents go down, we might even see them go up? Well, as farms get larger and larger, and I think that's occurring in many areas of the country, typical producers dealing with a lot of landowners, it costs a lot of time and management effort to manage a lot of crop share leases. I have to keep track of whose bushels went where, who's sharing which inputs. Going to cash rent makes it much easier to manage, therefore the tenant has lower costs. They also have more production flexibility. In the state of Kansas, this summer, I suspect we'll see a lot of double crop soybeans following wheat if we've got some decent moisture. Much easier to know how to handle that with cash rent versus crop share. Also, with crop insurance in this day and age, we can manage some of that production and marketing risk relative to what we could have in the past. And therefore, some tenants say, it's okay if I don't share this like I did conventionally because I can manage that risk myself with some of the tools we've got. Also, for our more progressive, or I guess I should say aggressive producers that are really trying to expand, we do know that expansion is easier to happen with cash rent because it's a more competitive market. I can aggressively bid up rents. Obviously, neighbors don't like that, but that's just the reality of how it oftentimes happens. Also could do it with timing. So the reality is there's a lot of reasons why when we go from crop share to cash rent, landowners might actually see their rents stay very stable and possibly even go up. Well, another question I asked at these meetings this last winter, a kind of a clicker question if you want, was I like to ask the landowners and tenants, reminding you that my audience tends to be pretty well mixed. I said, whose responsibility is it to see that a landowner's cash rental rate is fair and equitable given what's going on in the market? In other words, is it the landowner's job to know, or is it really the tenant's job to tell them? So I asked that question, and based on about 160 people that answered this question, you can see it was fairly well split. Turns out, coincidentally, my audience was fairly well split, so I can't make a bold statement. I do suspect that the landowners were saying it was the tenant's job, and I think the tenants were saying it was the landowner's job. But what I like to remind people is it's everybody's job. Landowners, it's your job to know what your land is worth. So landowners need to take it upon themselves to know what's fair and equitable. On the other hand, I would also argue, and I argue very hard at these meetings, that the tenants have a responsibility too because they often have way more information. Many times our landowners are absentee. They live out of state. They don't know what's going on locally, and they rely very heavily on their tenant to share information with them. So in that case, I would argue that the tenants have a responsibility to also help the landowner understand what the land is worth. Now, I've had some tenants tell me, well, it's really not my job to tell my landowner what their land is worth. And I remind them that, well, there is a solution to that. A solution is the landowner can take their land and put it on a cash rent auction. And I've got a slide here that's some information from an auction that happened in Iowa this year. And the reason I share this is because it got a lot of people's attention. This information got on the email, you know, and was sent around a lot. And it was some very, very high numbers. And if you compare that with what the Iowa State cash rent survey would suggest, an average from the auction of almost $500 an acre is not quite double, but it's significantly above the averages for those regions. So my point of this is not saying that you'll get a lot more money with cash rent auctions. My point of it is to say this is one way landowners might try to find out what their land is really worth. Similar example in Kansas. Previous year, so instead of this spring, this was actually in January of 2011, Northwest Kansas, land brought an average cash rent of $126. The NAF data for those areas, about $38. So the question is what is the market? Well, this reinforces what I was saying before. I don't believe some of our survey numbers reflect the market very well. On the other hand, I'm also going to say, I'm not going to suggest that cash rent auction reflects the market for all land in that area either. But I put this out as a reminder that if you as a tenant don't want to share information with your landowner, we somewhat might be forcing them into going this direction of these cash rent auctions. I asked a clicker question, and I only did this for, I think, one or two meetings toward the end of the season. I wish I would have thought of asking this question a lot earlier, but it really was that auction up in Iowa that got a lot of people thinking about cash rent auctions. So I asked this clicker question. I said, whether you participated in them or not, what's your opinion of cash rent auctions? And I basically gave the choices of I love them all the way to I hate them. And you can see that nobody, and once again, this tends to be mixed crowds, about half landowners, about half tenants. Nobody said they really love them. About 9% said, oh, they're okay. But clearly the majority of people said we really don't like them. And I immediately tell people that's my opinion of them as well. I would prefer we don't move in this direction for a number of reasons. I'm not sure they're always the same reasons as what the people in the audience might be thinking. This happens to be a slide that showed there's a story done out about the Iowa cash rent auction, and just pull out one paragraph from that story that said there's no secrets. Farmland tenants generally dislike public lease auctions for two big reasons. One is they remove the traditional personal relationship bond between the owner and tenant and reduce it to a numbers game. And two, it publicizes actual cash rents so all the landlords can compare their leases. If I had to guess, I think number one is what's going on in many cases, but not for the right reasons. If I'm paying my landowner a fair and equitable rent given the current market conditions, I would argue we'll have a very good, strong relationship. I think the relationship it destroys is all of a sudden my landowner might realize how much I was being underpaid for many years, and in that case, it does destroy that relationship. But I also am concerned about the second point, because we do know sometimes that someone hears a number and they think that's the right number for everyone in the area. And we know not all land is equal. And that is a scary thing about auctions, is we'll somehow believe that's the appropriate number for all land. And that clearly would not be the case. So just to kind of wrap this first session up, the trend has been away from crop share leases. It's moving away fairly rapidly in Kansas. A lot of states have already moved much faster away from it. We'll continue to see more and more cash rent. I think that's going to increase the importance of communication for tenants. We know that when you go to cash rent, you actually have less communication required, but I would argue that you have to communicate more because that's why some of these relationships go sour. We just aren't talking to each other. I think we'll see an increased number of these flexible type leases that William's going to talk about, but at the same time, they might become complicated and we might not see a rapid adoption of them. Average rents reported in many of our surveys, I would argue, have very limited value for setting rates of individual parcels for a number of reasons, as we've talked about. They can possibly be used to get some general trends over time. The use of cash rent auctions will occur more often in the future if tenants aren't proactive in sharing information with their landowners. If I'm sharing information with my landowner, they have really no reason to put their land up for auction unless they're just trying to get the top dollar. I think they put it up for auction because they really don't know what it's worth, and I'm not sharing a lot of information with them. So we might see more of it. If tenants are proactive, I don't think we would necessarily have to see a lot more auctions. And then the last thing I would argue, and I didn't really spend any time on this, but in my experiences, 25 years of doing this, when we have problems with leases, I would argue it many times comes down to we treated things in a non-business-like case. And that's often family situations, but the more we treat the lease business-like, I think the less problems we'll have. With that, I've got a slide in here that'll point out a few resources, but I think we can see this slide later. So, John, at that point, that's the end of my slides.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Duvetter, for your valuable insights and observations on general trends and issues related to leasing land. But we'll move now to ask a couple of questions of Dr. Duvetter, given his presentation topic. First one is, given your work with farm managers and leases around the region which you have responsibility for, would you describe which type of lease arrangement is the fairer, cash leases or crop share, and why, in your estimation?
It's a good question. In my opinion, and once again, I said, keep in mind this is coming heavily from my Kansas perspective, I would no question say that the crop share is a fairer lease. And now, a number of my economist colleagues would be probably criticizing me for using the word fair, because it's very hard to define the word fair, kind of in the eye of the beholder. But by that I mean, crop share leases, the beauty of them is they kind of adjust with the market. Cash rents, the reason I would argue they're not as fair is because they can become very out of whack, if you want, and we oftentimes don't make adjustments quick enough. Now, if I have a cash lease and I'm adjusting it on a regular basis, it can be every bit as fair as a crop share lease. I would only argue it's less fair because sometimes we get complacent and we don't make adjustments as needed, and the crop share lease kind of takes care of that.
Okay, thank you for that. We do have another question that's come in from the audience wondering what, if any, and again, in your experience in working with people putting these together, but what, if any, agreements or arrangements are being made where people are trying to account for large changes in commodity prices within the lease arrangement?
That's probably a better question for William after he finishes his, because his presentation will be talking about flex rents, and that's exactly what that whole the purpose of flex rents are. So I think we'll kind of leave that on hold, and I think that might become more clear as William gives his presentation.
Okay, and so I'll ask one other question then, not to let you off the hook here. Do many of the operators you work with have developed formal written lease agreements, or in your estimation, should they? And I'm kind of wondering also whether or not you think that when those types of written arrangements are put together, that they end up in a more equitable situation whereby both parties have basically had to consider what the terms are and kind of who's contributing what.
Well, first of all, whenever we've done some surveys and I haven't shown all the clicker question data, we clearly see that still the majority of people probably don't have written leases. And in a lot of cases, I think a lot of states have seen similar data. We do know it's changing over time. We have more people that have written leases today. One of the things why I push written leases is probably not for the same reason some people might think. I'm not pushing written leases because, you know, this is a legal contract and we absolutely have to have it. I think there's a lot of value in having good, strong relationships with our tenant, and sometimes a handshake is very sound. The reason I want written leases is because it's just one more communication tool. It's making sure all parties understand what's going on. So exactly what you just said is I think it'll lead to having a more fair and equitable lease because we all understand things a little better when it's in print and it's more transparent. But I would still argue that the majority of our leases are still, in many cases in Kansas, not written, but it is increasing, or it's trending in that direction.
Okay. Thank you for that set of insights. There are a number of other questions that we will try to get to as we have a panel discussion at the close of this webinar session in total.